Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday, February 3rd meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. We have several very inspiring pieces of business today, but before we can do any of those, we have to adopt our rules. So I will open an organizational meeting for the purpose of adoption of committee rules. Members, the rules were distributed to you ahead of time. They are the model committee rules under which all committees are operating. Senator Farioli, do you have a motion?
Yes, ma'am. I move that we adopt the rules, the proposed committee rules that are dated February 3rd, 2012.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved adoption of the committee rules for the Senate Committee on Rules dated February 3rd. Is there any discussion on his motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries and the rules are adopted. And for those who are in the audience, we've got three resolutions and we are going to take them a little bit out of order. We're going to start with Senate Concurrent Resolution 202. Honoring Mark Hatfield. Then we're going to go to Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 in memory of Betty Roberts. And then we are going to go to the final one on our agenda, which is SCR 204, Women Suffrage. So I will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 202. And Erin, could you tell us what this is?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Concurrent Resolution 202 memorializes United States Senator Mark Hatfield. There's a no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the measure.
And I see that we have the good representative Vic Gilliam in the audience. If you'd like to come forward, and Carrie Timchuk, looks like you're signed up on everything, so.
Pretty quick.
Carrie Timchuk Day.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Welcome to our first meeting.
Thank you. For the record, Vic Gilliam from Silverton, District 18, House of Representatives. The substance of the senator's contribution to this state will be beautifully and eloquently conveyed to you by this gentleman on my left. So it will not surprise you that I will be the fluff, but I have to tell you that my story is not unique. This person had such an impact on my life, and I think he really, truly is one of the greatest statesmen we ever saw from Oregon. You've heard that before. The list of offices that he held is long. I was overwhelmed by the outpouring of emotion and feeling for the memorial. I went to a couple of memorial services, one right here in this building, and I don't think I could say it any better than those that spoke. So I will tell you this. It won't surprise you that I was not part of his brain trust. I'll wait for the laughter to die down. I wasn't on his kitchen cabinet, but I was lucky enough to eat in his kitchen a few times. And he changed my life, and he is a wonderful person. And with all the greatness, with all the things that have been said, with all the offices, he was an incredibly humble and self-effacing man. However, I got really tired of the following joke that he told at every stop in the 1978 campaign, and I'm going to repeat it here for you. Glad to be here in, you name it, Jackson County today. When I was flying out here, he would say, I stopped in at the Dulles Airport to wash my hands. He would never say, go to the restroom. And they had drying machines instead of the towels. And there, above the drying machine, a wag had written, push for a message from your senator. That's the kind of guy he was. And I mourn his loss. I dearly love his family, and I appreciate so much the imprint almost every single corner of the state that he left. And if I accomplish anything here in my terms in the House, it would be to be just a little bit like him, to reach across the aisle, to put Oregon first. And I'm so pleased that you brought this resolution together, and I will let the rest that are going to testify. Go ahead.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carrie Timchuk, and it's my privilege to serve as Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society. Let me begin by thanking the legislature in this chamber for the support they gave OHS last session, and I hope you're enjoying the new rooms outside the Senate chamber that we helped to fulfill with our artifacts from our collection. It was a pleasure to work with Senator Atkinson and others on making that project happen. On behalf of the Oregon Historical Society, I am here this afternoon to express our support for this resolution and the other two before you. Historian David McCullough once wrote, "History is who we are and why we are the way we are." And there can be no doubt that Mark Hatfield, Betty Roberts, and all those who fought for the cause of women's suffrage helped define who and why we Oregonians are the way we are. I believe that when Oregon historians write about the last half of the 20th century, they will refer to it as the Age of Hatfield. For 46 uninterrupted years of public service, 4 as state representative, 2 as state senator, 2 as secretary of state, 8 as governor, and 30 as United States senator, Mark Hatfield never lost an election, and he never lost the trust and respect of his fellow Oregonians. You can see his impact in Oregon's natural and material resources, the highways, hospitals, and institutions that receive federal funds because of him. You can see his impact in Oregon's natural resources, in the Columbia Gorge and the many Oregon treasures he safeguarded. You can see his impact in Oregon's human resources and the hundreds upon hundreds of Oregonians who were Hatfield interns or staffers and who, like Representative Gilliam, inspired by his example, returned to Oregon to serve their communities in our state. But perhaps above all, you could see Senator Hatfield's impact in our inner resources and the example he set for honesty, integrity, compassion, courage, and bipartisanship. Just as Senator Hatfield is worth honoring for his impact on Oregon's history, so too is Betty Roberts. The history of Oregon is the history of pathbreakers, and from her service in this building to her status as the first woman to serve on both the Oregon Court of Appeals and the Oregon Supreme Court, few Oregonians blaze more trails with as much grace and grit, the title of her autobiography, than Betty Roberts. Finally, Madam Chairman, the Oregon Historical Society is proud to join with many organizations around the state, including Century of Action, who you'll hear from later today, in commemorating the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage in Oregon. It also took a great deal of grace and grit and perseverance for suffrage supporters to endure 6 elections before there were enough enlightened men to extend the rights to vote to Oregon women. Perhaps it is fitting, Madam Chairman, that in this historic first annual session, that one of the first actions of this legislature be the adoption of resolutions honoring 2 historic individuals and 1 historic cause that will long continue to help define who we are and why we are the way we are. And let me end by just saying I did speak to Mrs. Hatfield on the phone as I was driving down here today to tell her where I was coming in about this resolution, and she asked me to express her gratitude to this committee in the chamber for the resolution honoring her late husband. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you both for taking this off, and certainly it's highly appropriate and adding on to many, many, many wonderful words that have been said about the good senator. Any questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Senator Burdick.
I would just like to express my gratitude on behalf of myself and all my colleagues for the rooms in back of the Senate chambers. They're just amazing.
There's more to come. We've got
more to come.
Mr. Taylor has been up shopping in our vault, so we've got some more.
You have really opened up access to things that were not accessible in the Historical Society before, and all Oregonians are going to benefit by that, and we certainly have here in the Senate.
Well, thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And at this point, we've already opened a hearing on SCR 202. I'm going to also open a public hearing and work session on SCR 204 and SCR 205, since we've already received testimony in relation to those. And then we have 2 more people signed up on the one that we're currently considering, and that's Greg Honeyman and Dan Jarman, if you'd both like to come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I'm Dan Jarman. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to watch the proceedings, but Representative Gilliam suggested I just tell a story. I had the great honor and privilege of working for the senator right out of college, very young in my professional career. And like Representative Gilliam, certainly the man changed my life, and I must say that it was the best first job anyone could ever have. I wasn't the brain trust like the representative. I wasn't an insider on policy, I got to do the fun stuff, like drive them around, help them with personal stuff. And I tell you, I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. Just getting to know him and seeing his character was something that's I've carried with me my whole life. Just one, maybe two quick stories. He loved this building. He loved this Capitol. I had a chance when I worked on his campaign to come here with him on a few occasions, and I remember the day, it was actually February 14th, 1990, when he filed something with the elections divisions to run for re-election, making it official. And he wanted very much to not just be here to do that personally, but also he got a bouquet of a dozen red roses to give to the ladies at the kiosk out outside this chamber, outside this hearing room, just because he wanted to kind of show his appreciation for the people who have committed their lives to working for the state government. He, with his connection to Willamette, he was a professor. He was an educator, and his whole life was about educating young people. That's something that all of us got got from him. And I remember once when I was with him in Washington, D.C., and it was a quiet Friday afternoon, not a lot of legislative stuff, and he wanted to run some errands. So we're walking out of the Hart office building and walking down the hall, and all of a sudden the family from Beaverton, a mother and a father and a couple of sons, were just coming to the office to say hello and sign the guest book. They had no idea and no expectation that they would actually see Senator Hatfield. And they stopped him and said they were from Beaverton and thank you so much for all you do for our state. And he says, well, do you have some time? I'd like to take you over to the Capitol. And as he guided this family downstairs to the basement and then onto the subway and onto the Capitol, he spent almost the whole time talking to the two young teenagers about their educational experiences. What were they interested in? What were their favorite classes? What they wanted to do maybe in their careers later on. He was all about serving as a mentor to young people. And then when we got to the Capitol, he took them right to the Senate floor, and he let them sit in the Senate president's desk, and he showed them his desk on the floor of the Senate, and he probably spent a half hour with his family that he had just met. And that's the kind of person he was. He cared so much about Oregonians. He cared about people who came to see him in Washington because they wanted to learn something more about our government, how it works, the history of our nation, the history of the Capitol, the history of the Senate. All of those things were right in his wheelhouse and things that showed the true character of the man. So just wanted to share a story with you today. I'm very pleased that the legislature is doing this wonderful act. And on behalf of a lot of senators, the senators, former staffers, thank you very much for undertaking this great cause.
Great. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Craig Honeyman. I'm the legislative director for the League of Oregon Cities, but I appear before you today as a citizen of the state of Oregon and a former staff person for Senator Mark Hatfield. And like Representative Gilliam and Dan, who spoke before me, it was an honor and a privilege to serve that man and to serve the state of Oregon. I started in the re-election campaign of 1972 and went to Washington shortly thereafter and stayed till 1978 or 79. It was also my first job out of college, first real job, if you will, out of college. And some of my more memorable moments were those mad dashes to the airport, to Dulles Airport, on a Thursday afternoon or a Friday afternoon to get him home to meet with his constituents after a long day on the floor. And serving as constituents. I want to just, I read through this resolution, and I think it captures the man very well. But I want to emphasize something that's become increasingly important to me, and I think on the minds of all of us, as another one of his legacies. First of all, let me depart from that thought a minute. He is, one of his legacies is the staff, the number of staff people who have continued to do very good and wonderful things for the state of Oregon. Staff, too numerous to mention, but date back to, I mean, even his days early in the Senate, perhaps even his days as governor, who continue to serve this state. And that's important. But to the point I really want to make, this resolution is terrific, but the thing that stands out in my mind, my memory of him, is his willingness to give staff the opportunity to pursue their ideals, but in pursuing his political agenda, doing so in a collaborative manner with a fundamental emphasis on compromise and doing the right thing but getting the job done. Now, mind you, he could play hardball with the best of them, but for the most part, and especially during the days, early days, and maybe the first half or so of his Senate career, he was in the minority. And he learned how to operate as a member of the minority party and get things done for the country and for the state of Oregon in this collaborative and a manner with the emphasis on compromise. He didn't lose that when he became a member of the majority party and chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Although he delivered a great deal of largesse to the state, but he was also fair and even-handed in his dealing with now the new minority members of the United States Senate and the Congress. So I think, to me, it's sort of ironic in a way that he passed away during arguably one of the most contentious times in the history of the United States Congress, during a knockdown, drag-out debate over the extension of the debt limit and the beginnings of the debate over some equally difficult tax issues. I just wish that maybe the Congress had taken a pause at that moment and remembered Mark Hatfield for the style of politics and statesmanship that he used years ago, and how could that be applied to the difficult debates that are going on today. So that is a message that's important to me. I frame it in the context of Senator Mark Hatfield and conclude by telling you that for a lot of young people, movie stars and football players or other athletes are their role models and are their heroes. Mark Hatfield was and is my hero. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your great words. Any questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you both very much for being here. And members, we are in a work session, so the chair would entertain a be adopted motion. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I would like to move a SCR 202 with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved SCR 202 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. And Senator Atkinson, would you like to co-carry this with Senator Johnson? Great. That's what we'll do. And I'll close the work session on SCR 202. And we're already open on Senate Concurrent Resolution 205. And I see Justice Virginia Linder in the audience to testify. Would you like to come forward? Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry, before you say anything, let me ask our good committee administrator to tell us about this.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. SCR 205 memorializes Justice Betty Roberts, and there is a no revenue, no fiscal impact, so paperwork's in order.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Justice Virginia Linder, and I am a judge on the Oregon Supreme Court. I'm honored to be here today on behalf of Chief Justice Paul DeMunis, who wasn't able to be here. I speak not only for him, but I speak for my branch of government and for all of the judges and staff on it. We're delighted that this resolution honoring Betty Roberts is before the committee, and very pleased to express our support for it. Every woman who is a judge, a lawyer, or who just holds a job in this state owes Betty Roberts a debt of gratitude for the path that she blazed in terms of equal opportunity and equal rights in Oregon. Like the pioneers who founded Oregon, she demonstrated the vision, independence, risk-taking, and just plain grit and guts that it takes to make a difference. There are many who could speak to that difference, but I'm here in part to speak personally about her difference. I want to speak from my own experience about the influence that Betty Roberts had on the bench and bar of this state. Betty Roberts entered law school in the early 1960s. She was one of the very few women of that time willing to brave an entry into what was then truly a male profession. And brave it she did. Shortly after getting her law degree in 1962, she jumped into politics and into civic and public life. While Betty Roberts was doing that, I and my generation of women lawyers were completing high school or just entering college. It was an era of civil rights progress and progress for women's rights in particular. We were a generation inspired. We wanted to make a difference. We knew a career in law was a way to do that. But we were also, as women, a generation without role models. Many of us had never met a woman lawyer. We had never even read about one. I don't recall a single reference to a woman lawyer in any history book I ever read. There weren't even women to play lawyers on TV. By the time I entered college in 1971, though I realized it was possible for a woman to get a law degree, and I even thought it was maybe possible for a woman lawyer to make a living. And so, like many other young women, I set my sights on law school. It wasn't until 1974, while I was in college at Southern Oregon, that I met an actual lawyer for the first time. She was running for governor of Oregon. That woman was Betty Roberts. I heard her speak. I thanked her afterwards. I shook her hand. That was all. But I knew I would never forget her. What I didn't know then was how Betty Roberts would continue to weave in and out of my life and the lives of so many other women lawyers throughout our professional careers. Along with growing numbers of other women, I found my way into law school in the 1970s. Betty Roberts, by then, had found her way to the bench. In 1977, Governor Straub appointed her to the Oregon Court of Appeals, where she would serve until 1982. She was, of course, the first woman ever to serve on that court. That was the same year I began law school at Willamette University, just across the street. By 1978, as a second-year law student, I was clerking for the Oregon Department of Justice, and I began writing appellate court briefs and attending oral arguments in both Oregon appellate courts. The two courts consisted then, as they do now, of 17 judges, all of them men except one, Betty Roberts. It is genuinely hard for me to express in words how important it was for me and for the few other women appearing before those courts that she was there. Not only were we women in a male-dominated profession, we were young women, new to our roles. More often than not, I faced judges who were all men. But to be able to walk into that courtroom and to sometimes have Betty Roberts there, Judge Betty Roberts, made all the difference. Judge Roberts, with her steady gaze, her cool resolve, her quiet confidence. Her very presence gave me and other women lawyers appearing before the appellate courts a sense of place, a sense of personal legitimacy that we simply could not have had without her there. Perhaps that will help explain then why in 1982, when Judge Betty Roberts was appointed by Governor Attia to the Oregon Supreme Court, the women lawyers and women in Oregon generally were ecstatic. Sandra Day O'Connor had just been appointed to the United States Supreme Court only months before. To have Judge Betty Roberts become Justice Betty Roberts was overwhelming. For us, women lawyers so accustomed to rarely seeing a woman's face among the judges before whom we appeared, her appointment led to a spirit of optimism and a sense of what was possible that we had never felt before. Justice Betty Roberts served on the Oregon Supreme Court until 1986. By that time, her influence on the judicial branch and Oregon's bar was tangible. She inspired and energized my generation of women lawyers by her example alone. But Betty Roberts was never one to rest on symbolism. She became the go-to person for women lawyers who needed advice and counsel on their careers, and for women who aspired to become judges on our trial and appellate court bench. She was much more than that. Yes, she gave advice, and yes, she gave counsel, but her help was hands-on and personal too, both publicly and behind the scenes. Retired Judge Kim Frankel, also a trial judge in Multnomah County, would tell you, if she were here, how Betty Roberts helped Kim design her first voters pamphlet, coached her on getting supporters, and gave her moral support that helped survive what Kim refers to as the horrors of campaigning as a woman in 1978. Judge Marilyn Litzenberger, if she were here, also a trial judge in Multnomah County, would tell you how Betty Roberts walked door to door with her to talk with voters in Maryland's successful 2002 campaign. Right up until Betty Roberts passed away last June, every woman who followed her onto the Oregon appellate bench benefited from her practical and personal assistance. That has been true for each and every one of us, from now federal appellate court judge Susan Graber to the last woman appointed during Betty's life, Judge Lynn Nakamoto. Judge Ellen Rosenblum, now retired from the Oregon Court of Appeals, has described Betty Roberts as the mother of all women lawyers and our mentor in chief. Our mentor in chief, when former chief judge of the Court of Appeals, Mary Dietz, the first woman to hold that position, went onto the bench, was the first person to call Mary to offer candid, blunt, humorous, and very useful advice. Judge Darlene Ortega, the first Latina judge on the Court of Appeals, would tell you that Betty Roberts' example of courage and grace under pressure literally kept Darlene from giving up early in her career. And Betty's guidance and encouragement cheered and fortified Darlene in the years after she became a judge. Judge Lynn Nakamoto, the first Asian American judge to serve on either of our appellate courts, would tell you how Betty, when she learned that Lynn was going to apply for an appointment, met with Lynn privately at Betty's home, offered her advice and encouragement, and then publicly supported her and worked the phone lines into the governor's office on Lynn's behalf. All of us, the women judges on the appellate court bench and the scores of women judges on the trial court bench as well, have our own Betty Roberts story. We are her legacy, her lasting legacy, we and every woman judge that will come after us. Betty Roberts truly was a pioneer, but more than a pioneer, she was a change agent. Her mark on Oregon is indelible. The Oregon Supreme Court and Court of Appeals will host its own tribute to Justice and Judge Betty Roberts on February 16th. You will all receive invitations to that if you haven't already. We hope you will be able to attend. There is so much more to tell of Betty Roberts' influence than I can possibly cover today, but it is an honor to be able to have shared with you this one piece of the story. Thank you so much for giving me the chance to speak in support of the resolution before you.
Thank you very much for those eloquent remarks and for being here today. And I think, committee members, you will remember that Justice Roberts passed away in the very, very waning days of the 2011 session. So we had actually introduced a similar resolution at that time, but obviously the tragic event was pretty recent, and so we were able to work with the family and work with Judge Ann Aiken, the presiding judge of the Federal District Court, and with so many of Betty's colleagues and friends and family members to come up with both a well-worded resolution and the opportunity to take this up on the floor of the Senate the same day on February 16th that the Supreme Court will be also hosting a celebration of her life in the afternoon. So I think we'll be able to be joined by the family members here and have a wonderful, wonderful commemoration. So thank you for being here today. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. I don't think we have anybody else signed up to testify today. And I'm sure we will be joined by many people on February 16th. So, members, we are in a work session. Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And if the members are willing, the chair would be very happy to carry this. And I'll close the work session. And we are in a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 204. And Erin, would you like to tell us about this?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, SCR 204 commemorates centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon and efforts of those who led women's suffrage campaign of 1912. There is no revenue and no fiscal impact on the measure.
Thank you, Erin. And we already heard from one witness, and we have several people signed up to testify on this. So we'll call them, I guess, first we have Kimberly Jensen and several students from Western Oregon University. So if you'd like to come forward. And so if you could just start off and then everybody else introduce yourself by name before you start talking, that would be great.
Absolutely. Chairperson Rosenbaum, members of the committee, we're delighted to be with you today. My name is Kimberly Jensen. I'm professor of history and gender studies at Western Oregon University. I'm also a board member of the Oregon Women's History Consortium, which is sponsoring the project Century of Action, Oregon Women Vote, 1912 to 2012. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 204, which commemorates the centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon and the efforts of those who led the women's suffrage campaign of 1912. The achievement of women's suffrage in Oregon was a 42-year struggle with six ballot measures. It involved several generations of activists. The final 1912 victory, in particular, was possible because of the diverse groups of women and men across the state, including community and club organizations, African American and Chinese American women, wage earning and professional women, housewives, mothers, daughters, and male supporters in dozens of suffrage organizations across the state. Oregon achieved votes for women 8 years before the federal 19th Amendment was ratified in 1920. Not all women achieved the vote in Oregon in 1912. Native American women had to wait for federal legislation in 1925. First-generation Asian American women and men could not become naturalized citizens with voting rights until World War II and after, with legislation in 1952. Racism and other forms of discrimination also had an impact on limiting women's right to vote. The achievement of votes for women in Oregon is part of the vital history of the movement to achieve human rights in our state and across the globe. Senate Concurrent Resolution 204 will give tangible and significant support to the efforts of Century of Action and other organizations to educate all Oregonians about this important part of the history of our state and to commemorate the vital contributions of those who worked for suffrage and beyond, including office holding and other elements of full citizenship for women. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer questions, but I want very much to introduce two students who are students of mine at Western Oregon University who are involved in the centennial and are here in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 204, and I'm sure willing to answer any questions that you might have for them. Mm-hmm. Both are honor students who, through their coursework at Western, are engaged in projects that are part of the centuryofaction.org website to bring this important history to students and to all Oregonians in classrooms, museums, libraries, and certainly through the web. Taylor Ann Gillespie, on my right, is a Western student studying political science and communication studies. She contributed an essay with documents on the Portland Women's Club to the centuryofaction.org website and is facilitating the Votes for Women SASH project. And you'll see some SASHes here also on the website. And on my left, Zachary Jones is a Western student studying history and gender studies. He contributed an essay with documents on Esther Pohl Lovejoy and Everybody's Equal Suffrage Association to the CenturyofAction.org website. And this term, he's participating in projects with interviews with various women. He's interviewing Secretary of State Kate Brown for posting on the Century of Action website. So I'd be delighted to answer questions and, of course, delighted to introduce these two fine students. We also brought Century of Action buttons that we hope you'll wear and treasure forever.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Professor Jensen, and we are looking forward to hearing from you both. So, Taylor, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Chairperson Rosenbaum. I actually don't have a written testimony, but I am just here today in support of this amazing centennial and just the fact that this year will actually be my first time voting in a federal election, and it's 100 years exactly that women in Oregon got that right. So it's just a really special project to me and to all of the women and men in our state. So I thank you for being here today and listening to us.
Great. And thank you for your work on the sash project. I know I've got a sash in my office and forgot to bring it with me today, but I'm sure we'll see quite a few of them when we take this up on the floor of the Senate. And Zachary?
Thank you, Chairperson Rosenbaum. And I love
Zachary,
this.
Zachary, if you could just please say your name again for the record, that
sorry.
Would be great.
For the record, my name is Zach Jones, and I'm a student from Western Oregon University. And I just really enjoy this project because it's a part of a broader movement for human rights, and I'm a strong advocate for that, and I'm proud to be an Oregonian and support this movement. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you all for being here. Are there any questions for these good folks? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Taylor, Zach, what are you going to do after you graduate with a degree in history?
What am I going to do with it? I hope to go into grad school, and my goal is to become a professor of history, and that is my ultimate goal currently.
And I will actually have a degree in political science, and I plan on going into public relations and running for public office eventually.
Where do you hail, Ms. Taylor?
I'm from Eugene, Oregon.
Great. So
thank you for answering my question.
We'll look forward to seeing more of you in years to come. And thank you all for being here today. And we do have other witnesses, but I wanted to mention that Secretary of State Kate Brown's name came up, and she did want to be here to testify today, but had a conflict, unfortunately, and couldn't join us. So I'm sure she's here in spirit.
I'm going to take a very, very quick picture of these students.
Here.
For their campaign materials for later on.
Here. So you can be in it.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
It's
ancient technology.
It's all right.
That's appropriate.
It's waterproof.
We don't have a tintype to do this as a historically accurate picture.
Do you want to stand? What's your choice? Well,
let's stand.
You're very kind to us. Okay. We'll give you credit, photo credit.
1, 2, 7. and 8, 9, 11. Oh. Recharging.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot. So next we'll call Mary Beth Herkert and Wendy Frome and Catherine Adams, if you'd all like to come. Great. Well, if you've arranged an order, please just come up in that order then.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Herkert, and I'm the director of the Secretary of State's Archives Division, and I'm here today on behalf of the Secretary to testify in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 204. On November 5th, 2012, we will celebrate the 100th anniversary of Oregon women gaining the right to vote in all elections. Although Oregon was the 7th state in the union to grant women suffrage, it could have easily been the first, since first state in the union to grant women suffrage, Oregon's women in their pioneering spirit tried to achieve suffrage in 1884 when the issue first made it to the ballot but failed. This was 6 years earlier than Wyoming, the first state to grant women the right to vote in 1890. Not to be deterred, the issue appeared on the ballot five more times, and then finally, in 1912, 61,265 men granted the women the right to vote in 1912, excuse me. To affirm this vote, Governor Oswald West issued this proclamation to show his support of women gaining the right to vote, and in part it states that whereas the women of Oregon, after a long and patient effort, have persuaded the men of the state to place them upon a footing of political equality by granting them the right of suffrage. And he had this witnessed and signed by Abigail Scott Duniway, who dedicated 42 years to the cause and at the age of 78 became the first woman to register in Oregon to vote. And here is her first voter registration card that we have.
Wow.
So celebration of this historic event has already begun with the creation of the Century of Action Committee, who has sponsored events and developed a traveling exhibit currently on display at the Multnomah County Library. And in addition, the Secretary of State's 2011-2012 Blue Book, which was issued earlier this year, contains a color insert depicting the journey undertaken by the women and men of this state and nationwide to grant women the right to vote. Therefore, it's only fitting that the 76th Legislative Assembly, commemorate this historical event through Senate Concurrent Resolution 204, and that upon passage, this resolution will reside with Governor West's proclamation at the State Archives, where the future generations of Oregonians can witness firsthand that Oregon's pioneering spirit and desire for equality of its citizenry has and continues to be recognized by those who govern the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for sharing those historic documents. I note that you're wearing a glove, so
yes,
you have to be very careful.
Have glove, will travel.
Okay, and next we have a panel of Wendy Frome and Catherine Adams and Greg Leo, if you'd all like to come forward.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the Senate Rules Committee, my name is Greg Leo. I'm here in my capacity as Chief of Staff of the Oregon Republican Party. The Oregon Republican Party strongly endorses Senate Concurrent Resolution 204 and asks for a do-pass recommendation. We were participants in the work group that worked on this legislation, and we're not here really in any partisan way today, but really to say that this is a very important piece of Oregon history, very important to the political life of Oregon, and I do happen to have our Oregon Republican Party Legislative Committee Vice Chair with me today, Kate Adams. Kate.
Thank you very much, Senator Rosenbaum. Yes, the Oregon Republican Party strongly supports this resolution. I would like to make one recommendation for a change, and that is on page 2, line 15. It states, performing other aspects of full citizenship. And I'd like to recommend that that statement be made a little bit stronger and state something to the effect of, in other aspects of citizenship, including civil, military, and political functions. But just thank you very much. This is important resolution, and we really appreciate your efforts.
Great, thank you.
Wendy Frome.
Hi, I'm Madam Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today. My name is Wendy Frome, and I'm the State Coordinator for the Oregon Abigail Adams Project. I'm testifying in support of SCR 204, commemorating the centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon. The Oregon Abigail Adams Project is named after the wife of John Adams, the second president of the United States. Abigail was a self-educated and highly accomplished woman. She was a patriot in her own right and is still an inspiration today. Even though Abigail lived in 1776, she would have been a strong advocate for the women's right to vote during the suffrage movement. The Oregon Abigail Adams Project strives to carry on her spirit in helping to protect the integrity of the voting process and to help Oregon citizens identify and elect true statesmen. We are indebted to the women who paved the way for our generation to enjoy the freedom of fully participating in the electoral process. It's difficult for women today to even conceive the notion of not being considered voting citizens. Achieving that status was a long struggle. It took decades before women in Oregon were able to finally vote in 1912. The grassroots methods they used required great sacrifice as they traveled dusty roads by horse and buggy. We take for granted the comfort and convenience of the modern-day communication methods at our disposal today. Susan B. Anthony was an inspiration to women in Oregon and across the country, but she died before women in Oregon were given the vote. We should not forget the price that was paid by those valiant women, and always remember that the opportunity to vote is a privilege and one that we should take very seriously. A century ago, votes were marked on paper ballots and counted by hand. In honoring the struggle that those women undertook, it is incumbent upon us to ensure that the struggle to have every vote counted and not be undermined by the rush towards secretive and unaccountable technology. Samuel Adams said, "Let each citizen remember at the moment he is offering his vote that he is not making a present or a compliment to please an individual, or at least that he ought not to so to do, but that he is executing one of the most solemn trusts in human society for which he is accountable to God and his country." Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you all three for your testimony, and certainly a special thanks to Greg Leo, who I think, working with Senator Farioli and with the chair, made sure that we could hear this in the actual year of the centennial, and so I think we're going to actually have some fun with it when we get it to the floor.
Thank you very much.
And we will certainly incorporate your suggestions in our floor speeches. Thanks for being here. I think we have one more person signed up to testify, and that's Sunny Pettit, if you'd like to come forward. Two more people. Great.
Hello, Chair Rosenbaum and Co-Chair Farioli and Committee Chairs. My name is Sunny Pettit, and I am the Associate Director at the Center for Women, Politics, and Policy. The Center for Women, Politics, and Policy is really excited to see this resolution go forward. One of the things that our center does is we try to inspire women's leadership of all kinds. And one of the central tenets, of course, is to inspire the future, is to honor history and to really look at the role of the women who have come before us and all people who have come before us. In the center's educational work, we shine a light on our pioneering Oregon women leaders for our young girls and boys to learn from, draw strength from, and be inspired by. The 2012 centennial celebration is a strong way to increase knowledge of women's and Oregon's history and is a reminder that progress doesn't just happen, but is won. And we're looking forward to seeing what women do in the next 100 years to make history in our state.
Would you like to add a comment?
I'm Nova Newcomer. I'm also a colleague of Sunny's at the Center for Women, Politics, and Policy. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. I also serve on the board of the Oregon Women's History Consortium, and this work around the centennial has really inspired the work that we're doing at the center and given us a platform from which we can build the leaders, future leaders of Oregon. And so we're just so thrilled that your committee is taking on this resolution and trying to bring it to the floor.
Great. Well, thank you both for being here. Any questions for these witnesses? Okay. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of comments that relate to the proceedings here today. First, I would like to thank you for putting together a wonderful first Rules Committee hearing. I mean, the agenda is stellar, honoring Mark Hatfield and Betty Roberts and women's suffrage. So if that sets a pretty high bar for the Rules Committee to follow. But I have confidence in you, and this is just a really good day to be here. I would also just like to say to folks who can hear these proceedings, if you haven't dropped in to visit Mary Beth at the Archives Division, you really ought to. She is an absolutely stellar archivist, and the treasures that are kept over at the archives are well worth at least a drop in and I think if people had the experience, they'd realize that it's an amazing thing that living history is so close at hand. During the opening session, the president mentioned a conversation that the three of us had had, if you'll remember, Madam Chair, about the fact that real history may be symbolized by people who get the headlines or, you know, we remember in the history books, but it's really written by people, ordinary people, who have exhibited very high ideals and dogged determination. And that is easily proven by the 50-year struggle for women's suffrage from Abigail Scott Duniway and the ladies that we see in the photographs that are around the building in various places to the young lady who's going to be voting in the first national election here and all those 17-year-olds who are registered and just waiting to get their hands on a ballot. And six ballot outings, you know, that you have to believe that you're right in order to do something as many times as that. So, you know, that kind of determination, that kind of change that can occur over time, I think that the lineup of resolutions that you've placed before us today really symbolizes that. And I'd like to make a shout-out to somebody that I think of when I think about that adherence to high ideals and dogged determination, who isn't here today, but maybe is listening somewhere. So to Cappy Eaton, I say thank you for exhibiting dogged determination and the adherence to high ideals, and for me, the epitome of the benefits that have come from ordinary people who write Oregon history and women's suffrage. So Cappy, if you're listening, good job.
Any other comments? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
I was going to wait until after the vote, but given my good colleague from John Day's interest and comments in history, there is a gift for everyone who has come today in the audience. And James has just walked in. James, would you please raise your hand? When this hearing is over, our reading clerk and historian is going to take all of you to the Senate cloakroom, which has been named after the first woman ever elected to the Oregon State Senate. That room has just been completed and was unveiled officially this week, and you will be the first members of the public to go see it. And I'm not going to tell you anything more about that. But there's a very big connection to the archives, which has printed, thank you very much, what the original outline of that room was called, which was the Senate locker. So you get to go to the locker room. But in lieu of everything that was said today on women's suffrage, you cannot leave this building without seeing that room. So James is your tour guide.
Great. Well, thank you, Senator Atkinson. And unlike some other experiences you might have had earlier in your lives, being sent to the cloakroom here is not a punishment.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Senator Atkinson is far too modest to say this, but I would ask you to direct your attention to the bill creating the room, the framed bill, and the chief sponsor.
Great. Well, thanks to everyone who worked on this and who testified on it. And I just want to say that I think I've often said when people are excoriating and complaining about our initiative process and things they may or may not like that have come out of it, that this is certainly evidence that we do need, as part of the balance of power in government, the ability of citizens to petition the government, even those who were not actually voting members and had, as Senator Farioli aptly said, absolute passion and determination in working hard on something and eventually achieving it. So I think it's great that we're able to do this. Okay, so we are in a work session, and Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chairman, I would commend to our approval SCR 204 on women's suffrage. And the motion is that it be referred to the floor with a a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved SCR 204 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it is so ordered. And Senator Farioli, as you have spoken so eloquently today, would you be willing to co-carry this?
It would be an honor to co-carry with you, Madam Chair.
Great. Then we shall do so. And I think we'll have some more fun and merriment the day that we bring this to the floor, as well as some serious words. So I think that completes our agenda for today. Members, and I'll close the work session on SCR 204. And members, we will be meeting next Friday. We have not yet posted our agenda, but I believe that that hearing will be primarily devoted to executive appointments. So please do plan on your schedule to be here Friday afternoon. And thank you, everyone. Thanks for your patience. And with nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned. You know the history.